Welcome to the Packet Pushers, the data networking podcast where real engineers get together to talk nerdy. It's a special place where we never have to apologize that you, the listener, don't know what a packet or a router is because you know. You probably work on it all day, every day, and it kind of runs up and down the little ganglions in your brain. But here today in our virtual boardroom where we get together to gesticulate wildly at the virtual whiteboard with our virtual markers, we're going to get some excited about technology and maybe disappointed about reality like we normally do. Joining us this week, as always, is Ethan Banks. How are you today, Mr. Banks?
I'm all right. I was just thinking about your comment there, disappointed about reality. Yes, the unfortunate reality of day-to-day network operations is still a never-ending series of disappointments for me. And I was experiencing one just a bit ago trying to upgrade our network management platform, and it's been a series of nail-biting failures and near recoveries and so on. But overall, I am doing really well, having gotten some big projects behind me, so glad to be here today.
Yes, and it's good to speak with you again. It's been a while since we've actually chatted. We've been so busy with our respective lives. Our special guest today is Sue Hares. Sue is a long-term internet and IETF person and a BGP RFC author. Sue, welcome to the Packet Pushers.
Welcome. It's a great day to be on. One of the things that gets exciting is that, you know, most of the things still run on this internet that we thought might get working a while back.
Yeah,
like 20 years.
Yeah, despite our best attempts, we still haven't broken it, have we?
Well, we break it, but we keep fixing it. And I think the amazing thing is that even though we have tremendous technology, tremendous routers, switches that run a whole lot of things, we still haven't passed over the management hurdle. As you say, the management system is one of those things you keep trying to do a little better on, and it's a problem.
That's
BGP
a common theme.
Is one of those things we had tried to keep it simple, and as life has gone on, we've gotten more and more policy, and you know that's a good thing, but there's a challenge for management. One of the questions you have to ask is, will the internet go beyond requiring 100 internet engineers to turn the lights on? It's a challenge, you know. The configuration, the management systems grow older and older and crankier and crankier. Most of the ISPs have long-term OS systems that are just stretching and stretching and stretching. Many times I say it's a next month configuration in a sub-second world.
I mean, but it's amazing that BGP's come as far as it has. I mean, when you figure that what it started off with was something that was sort of like a 3 minutes convergence was perfectly acceptable, you know, that was just, 10, 15 years ago when we did that sort of thing.
And think that we started out with something else different. We started out with an EGP, which was a full network transfer every 180 seconds, really a great idea, not. But we then went to this incremental. Now we have machines that try to transfer data to which we're trying to fix it so that we just don't stop. We started out the network saying, well, that no service was obviously better than poor service because who would want poor service when it only takes a couple seconds to down your router and bring it up again? Now we're considering poor service because to unplug one of these monster machines takes hours and maybe days to get some of the convergence back. We ask ourselves, are we really doing the right thing? RFCs, our new changes in BGP are fixing old things, fixing error handling, fixing some of the convergence time. We just never seemed to outlast our BGP, do we?
You know, Ethan, or Greg, you know, it's interesting because you said, you know, we started out with 3 minutes convergence. We actually started out with 9 and 10 minute convergence. And in the micro scale, we've gone to sub-second convergence. But in the macro scale, we've gone to never, ever converging.
Yes, there are BGP routes that never converge.
Yeah.
And I wish I could say it started now, but we started detecting it in the 90s. One of the early stories is really a hoot, so I'll tell an early story.
Yeah.
And if it looks like someone's network now, well, that's not my fault. So I was doing a study on BGP convergence and looking at all the networks and detecting it, much like there's several route views and other projects today, but this story's probably been replayed. We found this one network was down in Arizona or someplace, and it would come and go with a frequency, and then its announcement would ripple throughout the rest of the internet. And I said, okay, well, this one I'm going to investigate. I'm going to call up the local operator and say, what's the story? And he said, well, it's this one network. It comes and goes. So I called up that operator and said, well, can you tell me? It always comes and goes. Well, he said, well, we bought a network interface that or a line that was substandard because we got a really cheap rate. You know, we got one-tenth the normal cost. But the line goes up and down once or twice a day. And sort of unfrequent notices. So this one guy, for, you know, paying a tenth of his cost, is causing the rest of the internet to go up and down and up and down. Mm. I got back to the other guy and said, put a static route in for this guy. You're going to save us all some money. And that started to be the case for many of these guys. It's just, you know, there are lots of these things. Yeah.
That's the tragedy of the commons. That's what we face
today. That's a threat.
Yeah.
That's what we're facing today. So one of the questions, you know, people say, oh, we're going to go and we're going to restart the world and we're going to do ONF, we're going to just revolutionize. If we just get rid of all these cranky controllers and all these difficult protocols to understand and go to something simple, it'll all work. And I'm like, yeah. Who is state configuration, you know.
Yeah, I listened to a presentation from Jeff Houston late last year, maybe early this year. I think we published it as a show, and he was talking about the RPKI initiatives and the cryptographic certification and how difficult it would be to roll that out, and that's still using BGP.
That's right.
You know, it's hard to imagine replacing BGP in any meaningful way because it's just so, you know, it's like left-hand, right-hand side of the road for cars. You know, I demand Americans change everything and drive on the right-hand side of the road immediately.
Well, that's it. That's change on the right-hand side of the road.
Yeah.
Google announced that type of radical switch. You know, ONF has taken over the world. You know, throw away your classic routers. Follow Google because we know our way. And, you know, we're just going to use ONF. We're going to get rid of all those cranky routers. We're going to get rid of all those subsystems. And then in the middle of all of their presentation, you listen to the technical announcements, and they said, oh, we started out with ISIS and BGP for the information. I'm going, did you turn it off? Oh, no, it's still there. But it's just sort of second rate. And you're looking at them going,
yeah.
Okay, you're still using it. You can't get off the drug, but it's not really, it's like, I only drink a little, guys. Really, it's just a little.
Yeah, no, I'm
not an alcoholic.
I didn't breathe it in. I only put it in my mouth. Yeah.
No, sorry. I think with BGP, though, Greg, your point is well taken. We're not going to be able to get rid of it. But I think what's going to have to happen is we're going to have to Ethernetize BGP before this is over with. You know what I mean by that, right? You know, Ethernet used to be differential Diffie-Hellman or differential Diffie-Hellman encoding, blah, 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 with all these different ones and zeros. And now today it's QAM or 16-channel, side channel, sideband, and all this other stuff. And if you plugged a new Ethernet port into an ancient device that actually runs Ethernet, it would struggle to actually work. But we still call it Ethernet. And I think we're going to have to do that with BGP at some point. We're just going to have to morph it slowly but surely so that nobody knows what we're doing. So nobody can listen to this show who's in participating in this. But anyway, nobody knows what we're doing until we've actually changed it completely. And it's a completely different protocol, but we still call it BGP.
Oh, I think we've been doing that for a while. I think, you know, when did we cross some of those barriers? Was it the day we first said, oh, we're going to use MPLS? All those route tags? Is that really BGP? Oh, well, it is. About the day we crossed and said we're going to have ORFs, we're going to have policy in BGP? Did you know we put policy in routing protocols? Yep, we do. Was it the day that comes when we put ISIS link state into BGP so we can drain it out the other side? Why? Because people think we really should do that because it's easier to get access to a BGP router than to maybe put a management station on it. You know, BGP is a TLV protocol that gets you from the here to there that the operators trust. Everything else has already been sort of morphed. It's an exciting world to live in. And yet, you know, I really don't mind the morphing of BGP because if it helps the network keep going, I'm pretty pragmatic. Yakov once was challenged, you know. We were once challenged by, I think, Alex Zinnen to determine the purity of what should go in BGP and internet routing. And Yakov stood up and in a Yakov fashion said, "If they pay me to put Shakespeare in BGP, I will put Shakespeare in BGP." And we are there.
Yeah, I think that's my sixth law of networking. If it's stupid but it works, it's not stupid.
Yes. Yeah. Or I have. If it's stupid, it works, and someone pays me to do it.
It's not stupid.
You know, if it's stupid and it works, and no one really, and you play with it in the dark of your closet, it's an experiment. If it's stupid and it works, and someone pays you for it, well,
that's called professionalism.
You can sort of translate that into whatever happens in the dark of your closet that you get paid for. So I'll just leave it there.
You know how disillusioning this whole conversation is? What a disappointment to find out what's really going on behind the curtains. Man, the look at Oz is kind of a bummer.
Sorry, would you like a pretty picture to hold up? We can do that on the podcast.
We can build you a Potemkin network there, Ethan, if you really want it.
There you go.
I mean, here you have a distance vector. I mean, BGP is a distance vector with path, but that means it has distance vector convergence characteristics. And inside of an IBGP, where our first attack was a full mesh distance vector exchange, you know, that was something that we thought, well, we don't have to do anything better than that in the beginning. And we first put in confederations or RDCs. That's actually Radia Perlman. You think that she doesn't get involved in BGP. No, she was there in the original days. But when it got implemented in Cisco, they sort of did a half baked job, and it turned out to be somewhat broken. So that didn't work so good. I mean, several of these protocols, you know, why did we get ISIS first instead of OSPF? Well, the original Cisco OSPF was really bad. The original guy who implemented and that version of the protocol is long gone, but the ISPs got hooked on ISIS, and several of them never got off the drink. So it's not the purity of these protocols. It's sometimes the performance of their packetizers. It matters. Am I disillusioning you more, Ethan?
Well, in a very practical sense, what it sounds like is the process of defining standards for the protocols, whatever they may be, comes down to idealism first, and then practical realities resulting in compromises and changes that meet whatever the new needs are. And so whatever the original vision might have been, things change of necessity to something other than what one might have preferred.
Change of necessity. Sometimes they change because implementations matter. I suppose sometimes
they change because people from one company don't want the implementation of another company to get ahead too. So, but anyway, I'm just in my disillusionment mode now, Ethan.
Yes, I mean, the business political structure has a lot to do with final implementations because the implementations that survive are the ones that end up in devices that are actually deployed. All the rest become interesting academic experiences. And while academia is extremely fun, I'm not sure that it really runs the internet. But the distance vector is actually going to come, is coming back up. The problem with distance vector in BGP comes up over and over. So it's something that my nerdy self reviews, you know.
Well, we'll fix it eventually, Sue. We'll get it fixed. We have a plan, you know. An insidious
plan. Mm-hmm. So, I have a serious plan. So the IBGP has always been the problem in my mind. But now let me ask you another question. How many academic papers do you think one can possibly write on the failings of BGP?
Hundreds.
100?
Oh, easily. Yeah.
Oh, you're way too low.
I know. I said hundreds in the first one.
Way too low.
The BGP's like Ethernet. It's flawed at about, so many different levels. If I compare Ethernet to FIDI or, the features of Token Ring or, the capabilities of Frame Relay to signal end-to-end state or, FIDI's ability to wrap a ring, we're still fixing Ethernet. But, hey, we've got it. Let's just move on and get it going. So, looking at what's wrong with BGP, with Ethernet, isn't going to move the discussion forward. What we need to do is have papers on fixing it.
Actually, there's a reason for all of this. Yep. One of the things that people want to do, other than bash BGP, I actually had a reason for talking about this. The convergence time that you've seen is really one of the problems we continue to see. And what does convergence time do? It runs in fluctuating routes and eats up pieces of routers. Because as you calculate it with BGP, you're actually adding up space. One of the additional things that people want to add to BGP is they want to add additional path calculations. We had a single path calculation which said if you get one prefix, we're going to give you one route. People found out that some things like that can cause oscillation. That's the MED oscillation piece. However, if you want to add multiple path, if you want to change the path selection, that's a proposal in front of BGP and the standardization people for a long time. It is upon that topic that I have found over 1,000 BGP research papers, and it well should be, because to go from a distance vector in someone's stepwise fashion to a link state or something else has so many failure causes that you ask, why would we ever do it? Well, because we need it. So that flippant discussion actually has something that I'm concerned with. Why does it concern me if we go through a whole bunch of path algorithms? Well, because the meltdown phases are really fun. It reminds me of an early meltdown phase. It's when you're a junior engineer and you're in the middle of the network and someone puts a new piece of software in. And you say, cool, I'll just take a few hours on this off time Saturday, maintenance window to just put all that new software in and make sure it runs, and I'll be here tonight. And then you get one of those bistable moves that it starts to fluctuate. Okay, you say, fine, I'll back up this machine. Then I'll back out another. And the fluctuation doesn't stop. And you back all the machines out, and the fluctuation doesn't stop until you pull down all the nodes and bring it back up. That's a royal algorithm failure. If we see a couple of those, the network burn will be hot.
I think the interesting part about that is that there's so much at stake on these internet connections today. Well, theoretically, the internet should never work. It should. It's so complex, and everybody basically shakes hands and says, it'll work, and that's about the only guarantee you get. And the BGP algorithm, as you say, is fairly it's basically a distance vector. And for those people who are listening who are students, now you know why we still teach distance vector algorithms at the beginning of educational network education. It's so that when you get to BGP, you know what a distance vector protocol is. But neither here nor there.
because it's GRP now, don't forget.
Just because you wrote part of it.
So one of the questions is, why are our tools so slow to find out even when we have problems? Have you figured that out?
Yeah, I've never given it any thought. So why is it? Because we've had companies doing root path calculation and and attempting to do various externalized versions where it calculates the BGP algorithm and looks for error conditions in the state in the network.
And they do a good job in general. You know, lots of them do a really good job. But the question is overall, how do we get our topologies on these networks? Do we walk up to a console and type show something, or do we query something? How do those companies find out the state of the network and then fix it?
By accident.
Do they get quick feedback? Is it next minute feedback in a sub-second world? Is it multiple minute feedback? How do you think they do it?
Well, today it's an operator typing ping.
Yeah.
Yeah. We still don't have. Oh, don't take me there. I mean, that, to me, no. So you know how you said earlier about SDN and OpenFlow.
Don't take me there. You mean you don't want to be chained to the router and thrown on VDAT?
Well, I mean, there are some tools that'll sit on the as a basically a passive router, listen to topology updates, and do calculations and model the network for you there. But
and some of them are fabulous tools. I mean, there are some really good tools that I think. Who listen to the network and model it, and lots of the ISPs have them. And but there are specific tools whose job it is to either sit on the BGP or the OSF and listen. And I've always wondered, is this the real state of our network management, that these tools become part of the network to network manage? Should we take another crack at it? Should we design this stuff in the beginning? Some of that is what some of us are looking at in the interface to the routing system work that Russ and I are beginning to look at.
Some of the promise of what you hear from the vendors regarding the buzzword I'm starting to loathe, software-defined networking, they're saying that if devices on the network can inform a centralized device about things that are going on, that would give that centralized device a better sense of what's actually going on in the network. So not just a southbound interface, but also a southbound API, but also a northbound. So two-way communication between the devices would give better perception of what's really going on out there, and give a more real-time opportunity to react to changes.
When they say they have a northbound interface, I always wonder which of the northbound interfaces in our current routers they didn't like. Did they not like SNMP? Did they not like the CLIs? Did they not like to pull out MIBs? You know, and what does a centralized controller really do? I mean, they say that, and I hear the swish of the hand wave. Whoosh, whoosh. It was a hand wave.
There's the name for the show. Swish of the hand wave.
But, you know, a little more specification would help me. If you want to go to a centralized controller like Google says they're doing, and the interfaces, and by the way, the Google guys are great. They've come out with a public statement that's detailed on ONF and showed the way they're doing it. And I think I laud them for their ability to demonstrate it all. But, you know, if you do a centralized controller and you have a network which is all in your control, and you have, in some sense, though you have numbers, you have the ability in a data center to have a centralized network, because that's where you push your configurations. That's what they say. Or Yahoo says, why should I ping stuff when I have a centralized configuration? That's a particular style of network, a particular style of data center with a very, you know, key performance. I'm going to take controllers at the top who know everything, and I'm going to shove the configuration down all these little network nodes. And like little birdies, they're going to take it, cheap it, and then they're going to start passing things. And the question is that really what the rest of us are living with? Hmm. Is that type of, I'm going to put it to a centralized controller, really work in everyone's network? If it works in your home network, maybe. That's just a few devices. Where would you put it? How would you manage it? If you're in a network which spawns multiple campuses, so where would you put it? It's a real difficult question to say we're going to go to in the software-defined network. Now,
well, I think the software-defined network fits into a bound problem space. So you could fit an SDN or a controller into a data center because the walls of the data center define where the problem is.
And, that's right.
And, you know, for Google's WAN, an SDN controller makes sense because it's owned by one group of people who can all form a coherent, well, theoretically a coherent strategy. Not all companies can have a coherent strategy in one team, but it's possible, theoretically. You know, the problem space is inside Google, so it can be defined, and it's just their WAN links. I think that we're always going to have autonomous protocols to do autonomous, you know, the definition behind BGP was autonomous system. And the idea was is that my company would talk to your company, and here's a predefined interface about how we'll exchange, and we define how the policy goes backwards and forwards. That's what BGP expresses. I will give you these routes, and you give me those, and that defines how we communicate. And I can filter these. I can say, I don't want these, and you cannot send them to me. That's how we define that policy. I think that that is always going to be needed in the internet because of the sheer scale of it.
Because we are policy beings. And in that fun state, in a moment, I'll ask you a question that Radio Perlman asked me and I'll give you her answer to me. So, you know, the real problem is we are seeing more and more of these policy bearers. If you look at Facebook, if you look at some of the other internet technologies, Microsoft published their stuff. They're using BGP clouds inside of the data center. They're not doing ONF. They're doing massive BGP clouds so they can quadrant off. Why do they use it? One, they like the policy better. Two, it's cheap. You know, when you ask the Microsoft guy at Nanog and various other places, he said switch vendors can implement BGP pretty flawlessly, even at a low scale of vendor technology. If you get to ISIS and the rest, it takes a little bit better vendor to actually have gotten it wrung out. That's a sad comment on where we are for the cost dynamics, but it's real, right? And they've disclosed, even within this tight constraint, how BGP is helping them. Hmm. So,
well, we've got that was Peter Lepukov who spoke about that because he's planning on doing that in one of the Microsoft data centers and has published a white paper. And as I think, Russ, you and I spoke about this a while back, and we said we need to get him on the show to make his case because you're not convinced.
I think you should. I mean, they published an ITF draft on it. I asked them to publish it because people need to see this. Hmm. You know, and they're proposing changes to BGP, which, again, in my pragmatic hat, I say, good. If BGP can adapt, tell me how you can adapt. Tell me where you can put a policy barrier. Tell me what problems you currently have, and we'll try to fix it. I am like Russ. I am pragmatic, or I have pragmatism down to the bottom of my toes. You know. Mm-hmm. Now I've said that. Maybe I should get back to Radia's question. Were you wondering what it was?
Mm-hmm.
Radia asked me, "What's policy?" So what do you think, Greg or Ethan, policy is?
Well, in terms of routing, my policy is I want to take this traffic or I want to send this traffic.
Okay, good. How about you, Ethan? What do you think?
It can be so broad because it depends on what sorts of, to use a word to define a word, what sorts of policies you wish to impose upon the traffic. For example, you may have a particular security model you're trying to follow, and therefore you may impose a policy that shunts traffic through a security device the first time you see a flow, something like that.
Well, policy has to include even things like traffic engineering. So it's got to be even broad enough to do not only source-based routing. So I think in our minds as network engineers, when we think of policy, and this may be what Rady is getting at, is that we think of things that are related to source-based forwarding based on something other than the destination address. But in reality, traffic engineering comes in there too because you're setting up policies to run around particular pieces of that as well.
So therein lies the statement Radia finally got to me. She said, when I gave more of Ethan's statement and then started to add more, she said, now, please take this kindly. your mouth's moving, but you're not saying much, because you're basically saying you're not giving a well-defined answer on what it is that we can do it. And I have spent time looking like Russ at all the various types of policy, and I have a much more formed answer for radio. You know, we send, it's about sending and receiving, which ONF would say here, yep, we send and receive at layer two, layer three. It's about the routes you'll color, right? Because communities color routes. And as Dennis Ferguson once said, I want my routes colored so I can tell which route I like, just like I like my jelly beans colored so I can pick the one I want. If it works for you, you need to modify the routes. Maybe you want to change something in them. You want to augment it. You want to hint onto the rest. And you sometimes aggregate your routes or your things, and you sometimes de-aggregate them. And that's one whole set of passing routes. Then there's who I'm going to peer with. I like you today, but tomorrow, nope, I don't want to talk to you. And then the security. And then we get to the next realm. So Ethan and Russ are really right. We've got to cart our policy into places we can understand it. We've got to try to make it faster. Some of the does that make sense, guys? Ask me a question, because I've done the radio deep dive.
Sue, the way I would put it from a routing perspective, policy in routing is anything that you do to intentionally increase your stretch above the minimum necessary to get the packet from point A to point B. Anytime
That's
you
right.
choose something other than the absolute shortest path in the network, whether through aggregation, whether through traffic, whatever your choice is, that from a routing perspective is policy. Now, that does not cover security. That does not cover, traffic admission. That does not cover quality of service. But from a routing perspective, anything that where I choose something other than the absolute shortest path is actually a policy decision.
That is a policy decision. And even I would say no path is something different than shortest path, because you may turn it off. It's really important to understand that policy is inherent to BGP, is implicit in ISIS. Do you know what I mean by implicit policy, Ethan or Greg?
Not in the context of ISIS, which lies outside of my experience.
Okay, so implicit policy is the policy we write inside the protocol spec.
Yeah. You know, so what the protocol
ISIS works this way. It has level two peers. It has a designated router on an Ethernet.
The basic rules that are governing the protocol as written.
You already know everything you need to know about ISIS. All you have to do is remember what you know about OSPF and forget half of it.
That's why I've always liked ISIS, because
it.
It's simple.
Take the complexity out, you got it. But, but the simple things about saying that is important when you realize, as Russ, it's anything but the shortest path. I mean, anything that is beyond a wire is networking, right? Because if we just had a wire and two hosts and everything all worked fine, we wouldn't need a network. We just connect the hosts. But all the rest is buffers and policy and churn. And it's a good thing, because it makes this fabulous fabric that we frequent. How about that? Fabulous fabric that we frequent daily. It's just that we don't understand what we're playing with. I mean, very few people, when they say, contrary to this, and maybe at some future date we can talk about my opinions about SDN and the problem with the hype is it hides the engineering. If people have said, let's go. We once upon a time had SNA, and my trick question for all my students is, how did SNA fail? Would you like to take a guess on how SNA failed?
My guess would be, A, it wasn't open, and B, it became overly complex when it went from what it originally was until it became at the end. Oh, and it was stateful. That was my biggest pain with it.
So all of those are true, but in reality, if you look at the business model for it, it would be hard to call SNA a failure, because it kept running for, decades? How many protocols have it? but it is a centralized controller, and it became complex and became hard to add. Well, we're going back to the same realm. Has anyone ever looked SNA? Has everyone, you know, maybe it's open. Maybe it's less complex, not really. Has anyone ever taken a stern look at the SDN and the directions and said, is really all the way over to a centralized controller? And maybe big, maybe companies like Big Switch have earned a big killing, but has that really proved the concept, or has that proved the fact that Cisco, when it can't, part of the difficulty in changes, as I'm sure you've talked about before, is that router and switch vendors are now taking 3 to 5 years to shove out even a minor protocol. That has to do with software engineering techniques and nothing to do with the protocols A, B, or C. It really has to do with how one tests and how one builds a testable long-term system. And if one looks at the theories of testing and routing. Go ahead, Russ.
The only thing I would add to that is it does have something to do with the protocols in the sense that it's not any individual protocol. It's that we've forgotten our simplistic roots and we keep piling protocol upon protocol. I mean,
absolutely.
I give you recently where somebody said, you really want me to deploy this to fix the problem that you solved or that you created by deploying that to solve this problem over here that you created by deploying that. It's like, could you please stop the madness?
And for that, I like SDN because they say, stop the madness. You know, the feature creep is like a muddy slough in the Northlands in Canada. You go into the beginning of it, it doesn't look so bad. And when you get in the middle, you're in the middle of the bogs and the flies and the, you know, things are all around you and suddenly you're wondering where you are. That's the feature creep that has happened over and over. And it's not that MPLS and the ITF have been above, you know, get just one little more feature. But it's really hard for people to say, let's do something simple and let's do rethink this. Is this really something we need? And SDN is pushing back, and I appreciate their pushback. But it's a whole system that has.
Hang on a second, Sue. I mean, how do you think that SDN is pushing back? I mean, do you mean SDN in a very specific way like ONF and OpenFlow, or do you mean it in the broader sense where every vendor is taking control of the term and trying to redefine it in their own market way?
The term is a marketeer a dumping basket right now. SDN is a total dumping basket. But, you know, this all started out of some of the network complexity theory groups in IRTF and other places where Dave Meyer and other people said, are we really adding the right complexity into our networks? Is this really going to help us test? Is this just one more feature to make router A better than router B? If you look at it in that broad scope, if you look at the SDN marketing stuff, just don't even get me started because, you know, the problem with all those marketing dumps and the hype is, you know, the hype, you know, the standard hype high to the despondent low of the hype curve. You know, you get the initial thrill, you get the hype that goes to the ceiling, and then you get the fall when reality hits and technologies go away. We do need to look at simplicity in the network. We do, you know, one of the beauties of BGP that the data center folks are rediscovering is that you can make it simple. You cannot have all those extra features for MPLS. You can simply have very basic BGP, add a little ECMP, add a couple private ASs, and it works. You know, so simplicity is sometimes beauty. So, Ethan, did I straighten out my SDN?
One of the fears I have with SDN is that as every vendor comes out with their own definition of what that is, what that means to them, so that they can establish some sort of a unique market position, that the solutions that I'm seeing proposed are not simple. Certainly they are complex or imply complexity, and or they don't actually do anything yet. You know, if you look at some of the current SDN announcements, they're built around an API. Well, an API doesn't do anything. It enables someone to do something, perhaps, and what that something would be seemed to be most obviously point solutions for people trying to solve specific unique problems in their unique environments. Again, I don't see that being a bridge to simplicity. Not yet.
That hype is just, like I say, is drowning the potential for change by sheer marketeer spin, because people want to attach their futures to a perceived financial win. And the real change toward simplicity, toward reexamining this, is a lot of really hard engineering that people who hopefully listen in this do every day. You know, how can I make this really simple and work? You know, Donald Eastlake once said on one of the 802.11 protocols, the protocol's not perfect when there's nothing more to add, but when
there's nothing left to take it away
anymore.
Yeah.
So he always drove through to simplicity.
One of the problems I'm having with protocols in the data center that, like, even conceiving of using BGP in my data center is the lack of – I don't get a lot of control. I get a lack of visibility around these routing protocols. So part of what's driving me to use SDN is that I have actively placed a rule into the forwarding table. Therefore, I have an application which knows exactly where this is going. So my long-term vision would be is that these applications, these SDN applications – have deliberately chosen to place a forwarding table entry in, and therefore it's got a way of representing that data back to me in a form that's meaningful.
Well, but see, the BGP guys that are playing with the data centers, they've chosen, and even Microsoft will say in its slides, it's chosen BGP because they can get topology information out. They can connect to a BGP centralized thing and start pulling all the BGP routes out. You know, that's why the people dump the link state into the BGP. We'll leave that one off for another moment. We're really lacking a quick topology pull. I mean, here's a pitch for some of the new work we're trying. This internet routing, this interface to the routing system, IRS, is trying to think about that simple idea of let's just pull a topology really fast and let's make an agent that does that, not a whole bunch of other MIB stuff, just something simple. Will that get the topology you need? You got to have the topologies. Don't you think so, Greg?
No, I don't. I don't see how I can pull a BGP table and put a representation of that in a web page that I would – I can't immediately see how I would trust that or be confident that it's an accurate representation of my network because the system is autonomous. It can self-adapt and change and how does that drive a proactive feedback loop back to the controller? So if somebody's over here typing away on the CLI, you know, you get guys like Randy Bush who continue to spout the old mantra, the only practical documentation is the running config. You know, we need tools that force or enforce or create opportunities to say this is here because this was done, not because some protocol just went and did its default thing and that allowed people to do stupid things. That's my problem with BGP and autonomous protocols is it's very tolerant. It allows people to be stupid.
Sure. It allows people a rope, a chair, and if you choose to tie it around your neck and jump off, well, you know, that's what autonomous protocols are.
Yeah, that's
a rope
right.
and a chair.
And I think that the most people, and certainly for me, and I'm working for some financial institutions, I need to know that my data center is in a particular shape. I need to, you know, take that piece of metal and bang it into a specific shape that fits my requirements and make it do that. That's why I'm moving further and further away from autonomous protocols. And in the enterprise space, which is orders of magnitude smaller than Microsoft, we have problem spaces which are, you know, I mean, Peter's problem is he's talking about 100,000 physical machines, 200,000 physical machines.
Well, sure.
You know, he's never going to be able to. Yeah, so is Facebook, and all those cloud providers have got their own problems, and I don't really care about them because they've got enough resources, and they're just vanishingly small use cases of what are the problem space that I've got and the vast majority of people.
So, Greg, I think what we're trying to do with IRS, though, since we seem to be morphing here, is that a little bit, or we're kind of mixing up SDNs a little bit along with everything else, is that I think the interesting thing with IRS is we're trying to – at least the way I see it, is we're actually trying to provide a little bit of the best of both worlds, where you have the option of letting the metal fall into whatever shape it wants to, where you don't much care, or where you want to implement an overall policy, and then, or an implicit policy, and then you can actually bang the metal into the shape that you want to when there's rough edges you don't like. To take it back to my original concept of routing policy being anything that is a stretch greater than one, or stretch greater than minimal stretch plus one, or whatever you want to call it. The reality is that the implicit policy in ISIS or OSPF is to take the shortest path, or BGP is to take the shortest path for some definition of shortest. And then if you want to modify that policy for specific flows, where I hope IRS goes in the long term is allows you to see where those policy changes need to be made rather quickly and automate the process of actually changing those policies in a way that makes sense, so that you end up in the same place where you end up where the only document, effective documentation, is the running configuration, just like you see in coding. You know, if you ever watch, if you ever read Geek and Poke, document. What are you talking about documenting my C code? That's insane. C code is documentation. If you want to talk about real code, we'll talk about assembler. But anyway, you know, that's kind of where I hope IRS kind of goes. I don't know if it's eventually going to go there, or, you know, if it's going to be another one of those efforts where we get tangled in our own tails, but that's kind of where I hope it goes.
See, but Greg's made out a real good point. You have the two constraints. You have the I want this firm boundary for my network, and I'll instantiate it by putting policy down at even the firewall or the forwarding plane, right? It's whether it's a firewall or a forwarding plane, we can argue about who's stopping the actual flows. And we want some autonomous. It's the stretch between those two that matter. Right, so Greg, and all my autonomous and SDNs, please, it's really the ability to choose between those two poles. I want firmness. I want, you know, GUI flexibility that matters.
And in fact, it's not even as simple as you don't want a binary switch. You actually want – some people will want right up one end of the scale. They'll want to define every single flow, every source, every destination, and that's you know, there's people like the FBI and, you know, government agencies who want to be able to control every single communication and have it, you know, actively permitted, and everything else is denied. That's one end of the scale. And then right at the sliding end of the scale towards the other end is fully autonomous protocols. You plug it together, and say conft run, save, and you're done, and then the protocol will default to a known state accord as long as you know the protocol. And then there's a whole sliding scale in the middle where, say, for example, in a typical enterprise, we might use SDN very heavily in the virtualization switch network, but there might be part of the data center which falls back to spanning tree because that's what makes sense in that part, because the price of an SDN controller is high. You need a lot of resources. You need to spend a lot of money on expensive software platforms that drive control, that can deliver those entries into the control plane to be loaded into the forwarding plane. And then in the WAN, you might have completely autonomous protocols out there. You may choose not to do. Or you might actually say, well, I'm going to have a separate OpenFlow controller type engine or a control type engine that actually just does alternative pathing, and it adds flows on top of the default pathing to send traffic this way or that way because, you know, that's your Oracle traffic, so you're not necessarily slower than everything else, so you can buy an upgrade to the bandwidth so that everything else gets faster. So always put the Oracle into slow path. That's what I do. And, you know, or you might want to say, this is video conference traffic. It's going to be bursty. Therefore, I want to drop it on an alternative path that goes out via an uncongested link, so it goes via a different mechanism. And that's the middle. They're sort of like, you know, fully controlled, fully autonomous, and then in the middle there's a sliding scale of how we get there. And that's what I, you know, that's what we're working through at the moment, is what's that middle.
And
if I had to define SDN for me, not for the rest of the world, or what I hope this paradigm shift is, I'd like to have the bar in the middle that you just described, this sliding scale, be sliding and be able to be slid within some constraints in each box so that you could make that determination or make that determination at the network spot. That's a very rough and ready SDN, and I'm sure the marketers would hate that, but I'm a nerd, and I want my scale in the middle. I don't want it on either end.
Right. And Greg, I think you've actually just described the network complexity problem that we have, which is that if you want your Oracle traffic to go one direction and your video conferencing traffic to go another direction today, you actually implement two different protocols or two different solutions to solve that problem. And so therein lies the protocol pile that we own and that we try to deal with as network engineers. Whereas the great white hope, if you will, of the entire SDN world is to take all of that and say, I can make, as you say, there is a sliding scale. I can let everything do what it's going to do based on the policies implicit and explicit in the protocol. I can do everything manually, or I can do everything implicitly through something like OpenFlow and SDN, which, you know, by the way, I'm a big believer in OpenFlow and SDN. I mean, my company VeriSign just joined ONF, and so I'm participating in the ONF process now. Or you can say something like what, I'm hoping IRS does, which says, let's leave things alone unless we need to mess with them, and then you can go back and gain the information and do things without having to do a pile of protocols to get there.
It's not easy. So I don't know if we've actually covered what the IRS, or maybe we should just summarize what the IRS's goals are within the IETF to make sure that we've explained that to people who may not be familiar with that.
I will give you my interpretation. You should read the framework, you should read the policy draft, and you should read the problem statement for full definition. Mine is a very pragmatic approach. You need a routing interface that is going to give you tight loop feedback instead of the more time delayed feedback that our current configuration or management view has. You need something that provides an ability for that middle sliding scale by being an enabler of a hybrid. The first statement, I'm sure that all the SDN player, all the IRS players would agree with. The second statement is germane to our discussion. We need to have something that will help move the hybrid scale of faster, more responsive networks. You've nailed it in several of the configurations.
So I'll have links to those in the show notes. I'm sitting here looking at the interface to the routing system problem statement from July 30, 2012, and the draft WARD IRS framework on the IETF website. So if anybody wants to read those to understand how the IRS framework is looking in those. And then, of course, there is the IETF mailing list, which is where it's discussed in the open.
I would also like to recommend the IRS policy draft written by Atlas, myself, and Joel Hepburn. I think that will begin to answer my major concerns, which is what are the implicit policies and perhaps even explicit policy that adding this new thing into the network requires? What do you need to know about it? How can you use it? So I'd appreciate it if they might take a look at that. We coined some new terms, coming from the IRS vocabulary, IRS commissioner and IRS agent. Yes, that does look like something coming from the real IRS, so hopefully people will be nerdy enough to look at it.
Hopefully we'll dream up a new name before it gets too far.
Oh, I don't. I'd rather have fun names. You know, how many dry and boring protocols do you read today?
Don't take me there. You're talking about my own documents at this point.
There's also going to be a use cases draft. So the full suite of drafts for IRS today is going to be a framework, a use cases, a policy. Yep. And there will probably be a protocol draft at some point in the future. But I think the descriptive drafts are the framework, the policy, the use cases. Yep. And those are the ones, if people could dig those, that would be the...
That would be really good. There is a main use case draft planned, and then we will have which focuses on FIBs and changes, and then maybe some BGP changes. I don't know if that's really in there yet, Russ, but then there may be some odd drafts, like how would you use IRS in the case of mobile backhaul or other things. And those are thought experiments to see if we can get some real wisdom from real people on if this solves problems they're facing. or data center or some of the others. So it would be good if you start seeing those drafts to come on in, because it's an attempt to bring a realism of real packet pushers into the...
Because we all know that everybody who participates in the ITF is not real.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You're listening to Virtual Sue. It's this magic voice in the ether.
Yeah, you're mystical. You're some mythical creature that actually knows all these things, and you work to make these magic things happen. Well, that's it for the show this week, and thanks for listening to the Packet Pushers. We should be back again in about a week or so. Make sure you come back. Just before we run, as always, Packet Pushers is supported at least in part by your donations. So if you're able to, please consider making a quick donation to support us in producing the show. But more importantly, you can help us by telling your friends, your study groups, your forums, and other people in the industry about us, and perhaps even leave a review of the show in iTunes, which really helps us to find new listeners. We are always looking for show topics, ideas, and people to interview. Keep the feedback coming. We've had some great feedback from people this week who've been very polite and actually said nice things about us. That's always nice. Do keep that coming, because we like to know where we're going right and where we're going wrong. I'd like to thank our external resources for joining us this week. So, Russ White, I forgot to introduce you on the way in, but Russ, thank you for joining us. What are you doing this week?
Thanks. I am working on learning Greek and trying to get a chapter done for my book.
Excellent. So you're going to keep us informed on that so we can tell the audience about where your book is, yes?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And thanks very much to Sue Hares, who's joined us from 1 a.m. in China. Are you over there for an ITF meeting, Sue?
No, this is a company meeting. So I work for a Chinese company, Huawei. So this is work in the real world. It's the day job.
It's the dollar day job, we call it.
The dollar day job.
Yeah. Insert company name, whoever it is this year.
Yep.
So thanks very much for joining us. If people have got any questions for Sue, Sue's pretty busy. But if you do have any questions, maybe you can either find her on the IRS mailing list. We'll have some show links there, or you could even loop maybe some queries back through us. We'll do our best to forward them on to you. Thanks very much for joining us, Sue.
Thank you again.
All right. And Ethan, we've got a big couple of weeks coming up. We've got Cisco's just committed to recording a whole bunch of shows on a whole bunch of their new generation of topics. They've got a whole bunch of announcements coming out. We've got a busy few weeks ahead of us.
We do. We have that content to record. I'm all backed up on blog posts that I want to write. I'm just busting to get at the keyboard if I can get this pesky day job to leave me alone for a few minutes. It seems like things that pay the bills are what demands the most attention, unfortunately. And so my writing has fallen a bit off, but I've got stuff coming and looking forward to that.
Okay, and they can find you, of course, on the packetpushers.net.
Packetpushers.net is where I'm blogging, and, of course, on Twitter at EC Banks. And there's still an open invitation if you want to blog at Packet Pushers. Just send an email to packetpushers@gmail.com and let us know, hey, I've got some things to say, and I'd like to blog at packetpushers.net, and I will get you an account and get you set up.
And, of course, I'm Greg Farrow. You can find me on my blog at etherealmind.com. I'm on the Twitters as at etherealmind. We'd love to hear your feedback about today's show, so send us an email to packetpushers@gmail.com and let us know what you're thinking. Alternatively, you can check out the podcast website at packetpushers.net, leave comments on today's show, or follow us on the Twitter at packetpushers. And as always, remember that too much networking would never be enough.